broadcasting live from the PHX.FM studio in Phoenix, Arizona. It's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by Bob Reich, Certified Business Coach. Welcome, Bob.
Thank you.
And Thomas Lindsay, who's a partner with Accelerated. He's an expert in small business health insurance, something that is complex and essential. I'm looking forward to our conversation because I'm going to be learning more from each of you about the world that so many of us live in, the world of solopreneurs, owner-operators, small businesses, even mid-size companies, because there are unique dynamics in this environment that don't always, you know, we don't learn about from either the startup scene or the large corporate scene. Coach Bob, why don't you start us off with a little overview of who you are and with the kind of work you do?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for having me on, Adrian. This is fantastic. I'm Bob Risch. I'm a certified business coach. I'm a certified master trainer. I'm excited to do what I do because I have a passion to help people who are successful, professionals, business owners. They know they're successful, but they have a hard time getting to that next level. We help them get to that next level. And we do that through systems and processes, not only developed by business experts like Brian Tracy, John Maxwell, but also my background over the last 20, 25 years and helping people get to that next level. And we do that through different systems and processes that is customized, focused on each individual person.
You know, it's funny because every one of us is human. And yet at the same time, we don't often think of our own humanity as an area that we can go to work on optimizing our own performance, our own outlook. We often tend to think the problem is out there. It's with my people or with the vendors that I rely on to drive a lot of the things.
Right.
It's with my customers. Mm-hmm. You know, worst thing of all is make your business problems the customer's fault.
Right.
How do you get people into the mindset that self-improvement and honing one's skills, sharpening the saw, to use the old phrase, is an essential part of taking their business to the next level?
It's through relationships, and everything is through relationships. And I talk to so many people each and every day, and I always tell people right off that I'm not right for everybody. And when I have these conversations with people, I sit and ask them questions about them, who they are, what are they looking for? And it's amazing when you ask people, what are they good at? What do they love? They always tell you what they love, but they also tell you what their needs are. And I love to sit and ask specific questions, which lets me know, but more importantly, them know, how does it make sense to work together? So when I choose to work with them, they're choosing to work with me. And what we do, we find out where they're at, where they want to be. And then what we do is we close that gap. And it's amazing how most of my clients who retain my services and we build that relationship, it's people that I would have never guessed that they would have become a client. So really, it's not about looking for clients. It's not about looking to make money. It's about finding people that need me, finding people that are looking for somebody to help them, and then I find out where they're at, they find out where I'm at, and then we make it work. And it's an exciting thing, and it's exciting to watch happen.
Ms. Lindsay, you have a lot of experience in the world of insurance. Can you give us an overview of your work, the kind of people that you support, and kind of how that has come to be the central issue that you focused your career around?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Can I call you Adrian?
Yeah,
or
please do.
Do you want me to call you doctor?
I don't. It's a PhD anyway. It's not the kind of doctor that actually heals people.
Yeah, but that's still a lot of work and effort.
Yeah, it's the most expensive three letters I've ever purchased in my life.
Awesome. Well, Adrian, so yeah, I'm a career kind of, I'm an insurance nerd, essentially, HR nerd. Grew up in the PEO space. That's professional employer organization. So it's a way for small businesses to outsource their non-core functions, you know, all the things related to being an employer that really don't generate revenue. So I grew up in that space for 23 years. Part of that is, you know, delivering benefits to the small employer. And I got burnt out and decided I wanted to spend some more time with my family. And so in 2016, I resigned, sold my shares from the company that I co-founded in 2004, and went into the sales side, basically selling the services that I had been providing as a CEO and COO all those years. And one of the problems I ran into was health insurance as a entrepreneur myself, right? A sole proprietor, right?
Yeah, covering yourself.
Covering myself, because I come from, I'd been in the group health space my entire career. I've always had top of the line health insurance. I was usually the one responsible for choosing the plans that we even had, self-funded plans at different times throughout, the career. But now I was out there wandering around, as a individual looking for coverage, and I was kind of shocked by what was out there. And it was unaffordable. And I fortunately ran into medical cost sharing. And my initial response as an insurance guy was that, you can't get healthcare without insurance. I mean, that's just, how does that work? That's risky. And, but the depth of the problem was so bad that it forced me to really dive in, dig in, research, analyze, do everything I could to understand what this was all about. And I was happily surprised by what I found. And now that's a big part of what we're doing at Accelerated, is bringing this solution along with other non-traditional solutions to the healthcare, health insurance affordability dilemma, in essence.
I'm fascinated by the juxtaposition of your two kinds of expertise, because in many ways you serve the same clientele, and yet health insurance is a problem everyone knows they have, but struggles to solve. And a lot of the issues that you deal with in a coaching environment are issues that people don't realize they have. And in fact, it's beginning to see their blind spots as the first beginning to the kind of transformation that you provide. And in both forms of expertise, you're dealing with essentially an information gap between what's available to people to make intelligent, smart decisions, and then a lot of other moving parts of the equation. Thomas, let's just start with the insurance side for a second, because sometimes it's easier to wrap our heads around this issue. But insurance has for so many years been a black box. It's something that you knew you had to have, you had to pay for, you didn't understand how it worked. The information asymmetry worked in the favor of the insurance companies and the providers, because let's not begin to open the real Pandora's box, which is around transparency of pricing, right? How do you, never mind shopping for insurance, that's important. We're going to talk about that, but let's talk about shopping for care in a complete lack of transparency around the pricing of these services. There's literally no essential service that you go to get that you don't know what it's going to cost when you walk in the door, except for healthcare service. But I get on my own little soapbox here as somebody who's been on the painful end of this myself. So Thomas, how do you begin this education process with people? Because I don't even know what medical cost sharing is. I'm probably not alone. So a lot of your work is beginning to inform people about stuff that for a long time maybe was not that obvious. How do you do that?
Well, first of all, you bring up two excellent points, right? The fact that the system is confusing, and it's by design. It's designed that way to keep us all in the dark and to all make us think that we can't get healthcare without health insurance. So that's part of the problem. And then, as you mentioned, they do that through transparency, lack of transparency, right? So you, like you said, what else? What other product do you go out and you purchase that you don't know the price of before you get it? Nothing. And it's just when you start to think about it in those terms, you're like, yeah, this is crazy, So that's really actually where it starts when you're talking to people, is about you just have to start with, hey, the healthcare system is broken, and you know that it's unaffordable, and here are the reasons why. So we talk about why it's unaffordable, and in essence why it's broken, and then we talk about, it doesn't have to be that way. There are other insurance is one way to pay for healthcare. There are other ways. And those other ways are better for most people. You know, an insurance company and a PPO network and a pharmacy benefit manager, these are all just middlemen in this transaction of you buying healthcare. And they don't need to be there. They have, if they ever did serve a purpose, it's long past due to, you know, change.
Yeah.
And so that's how we start the conversation.
So if you were to put my options as a small business owner into some big bucket, so I could start to at least make sense of some of the big categories and some of the differences between those categories, and pretending for a second, which is in this case the truth, that I don't know very much about this. I just know I don't like any of it, and it's all painful. How would you begin to explain to me my different options?
Yeah, your spidey senses serve you well.
Right.
There's basically small group coverage for you as a small employer, the small group marketplace where you get an agent and they go out and shop, you know, the what they call the BUCAs of the world, you know, Blue Cross, United, Aetna, Cigna. They go out and shop. And then there are association plans where you can you know, join an association that has health insurance, and it's usually self-funded or partially self-funded. Aside from that, that's pretty much it. You cannot offer coverage as a group and send your employees to the marketplace, the ACA marketplace, or let them go and try and find coverage on their own and maybe give them additional compensation to help pay for that, what you would, you know, contribute normally towards their benefits if you were offering group coverage. But those are the traditional options, right? However, now there are some non-traditional things available, like direct primary care, where you can contract with a physician who has basically left the system, started their own practice. They don't take insurance. They sell memberships, and you get unlimited primary care. You can, you know, buy those for your employees. There's also medical cost sharing or health sharing, which you can join as an employer, which isn't insurance, but it works.
And that's something you've become increasingly passionate about. Am I right? And this is how I first became aware of what you were doing, was through a video that you had posted on LinkedIn. And Bob, I know LinkedIn has been a big part of your business development. I want to hear more details about that. But you were talking specifically about this issue. So what is the medical cost sharing? How does that work? And what do people need to understand about it?
Well, medical cost sharing has been around for about 30 years. Started by religious organizations, basically medical or health sharing, right? And it's not insurance. It's just a group of people coming together and helping cover each other's medical expenses by sharing, right? You pay in a monthly membership fee, and then the health sharing organization will distribute funds to their members based on their membership guidelines and reimburse for eligible expenses. It's not insurance. You can't say that it's even like insurance, but it functions in a very similar way, in that people pay money into a pool. The funds from the pool are then used to pay for medical care.
Well, and let's talk about some of the nuances of that. You said you're a bit of an insurance nerd, and I'm not an insurance nerd. I'm just a nerd. So, but I am kind of curious. So insurance works by distributing risk. So there is a pool, everyone's paying into it. And then the idea is that somehow there are known statistical degrees to which certain things will happen, so they can afford to handle that. Some of those assumptions were why insurance companies fought so hard against the Affordable Care Act, which I, to put all my cards on the table, I'm a huge fan of, and was unfortunately misnamed. Because the one thing that that act didn't do was make anything affordable, but it did provide access to care. I think they should have just called it the Accessible Care Act, and we wouldn't have been so confused about it. But in any case, that's an attempt, one attempt at health insurance reform, doesn't at all address health care reform. And in any case, the core principles of how insurance works weren't changed by that, which is why the insurance companies resisted it so highly. It threatened a lot of their profit margin, I assume. Again, I'm an outsider to all this. How is it actually different? So people are still paying in, and then they're getting benefits paid out. So the, in a way, the cost is distributed. What are the fundamental differences? Why can't you call that insurance?
The big difference is there is no actual transfer of risk. So you are not buying an insurance policy whereby the insurance company is taking on the liability, right? The no one in the community within the health sharing organization are legally obligated to pay for your medical expenses. So if the money were to run out, the money runs out and there's nobody, you know, there to pay for it, right? To reimburse you for any expenses that you incurred. So that's the big difference, is there's a contract
and a
transfer of risk.
That's a very fundamental difference.
It's fundamental.
Yeah.
And, you know, and if that is, if you can't imagine, you know, yourself participating in a system where there isn't somebody held responsible by contract with the force of government and law behind it, then you're probably, you're better off staying within the insurance system and paying the costs associated with it. But if you, have a little more, if you're a little more tolerant, you believe that, you know, people generally fulfill their obligations and do what they say they're going to do, have some faith in humanity, which I do.
Yes.
Not saying that I did initially, but
interesting.
I certainly do now after all the research and due diligence that I've done, and especially with the one medical cost sharing program that we represent, have an extremely high level of confidence and faith in them and their ability to manage the membership and deliver on the service. So, but that's the key point. The key point is there's no transfer of risk. There's no legal obligation. There's no policy. The only thing you have is a membership guideline, and the health sharing organization or the medical cost sharing organization will dispense funds on the basis of that guideline.
So then what's better about it? What makes this a more attractive option? Is it a lower cost for an equivalent amount of coverage?
Yeah. Significantly lower cost. Yeah. So I, for example, save 60%, a little over 60% versus traditional health insurance. That's huge. I have a friend who's a lawyer, and he saved, his premium went from $2,500 at the insurance company to about $800 with the health share per month. That's a lot of money.
For an equivalent level of coverage.
Exactly.
This is something, and I don't want to get too far down this rabbit hole because, you know, everyone can get a little heated around it, but this is something where I think most people who have been upset at various points in time because they were told they could keep their plan and then the plan went away and various other kinds of things. I'm like, yeah, but did you actually know what that plan would have done for you? Part of the reason why some of those plans went away was they were rigged and not in your favor. There was things in that. In other words, you never really knew until you tried to use it what it was going to actually do for you. And so the idea of like, I have a great plan is usually coming from somebody that hasn't actually had to claim a lot of benefits from it. And at least that's a huge generalization, maybe unfair. But going all the way back to pre-Affordable Care Act, my wife and I, when we had our first child, she was a W-2 employee of a large publicly traded company. We had quote unquote good health insurance. I was covered under her plan as a spouse. And and the plan said that it covered 100% of maternity care. What it didn't say is that maternity coverage stops when labor begins. Actually, having the baby is not covered under the plan. So we got a huge bill from the hospital that we ended up at, you know, which was, again, 20% coinsurance was our, we were on the hook for, but that still ended up being an awful lot of money. That we read, I read that plan very carefully, never saw that coming. Maternity coverage doesn't include labor and delivery. Who would have thought? And this is from a very well-known health insurance company that provides these kind of things for a lot of folks. Anyway.
It's a great example.
I digress. Bob, I'm fascinated by something when it comes to business coaching, whereas insurance is something everyone knows they need but may not know how to navigate the complexity of. Coaching is not something that is immediately obvious to people as something they need to have. Why is a business coach so important for a small business owner?
It's so imperative. And one of the questions that I ask all of my clients is when I'm interviewing them and talking to them, I ask them, I said, there's one question that you didn't ask me. And they go, what's that? I said, Bob, do you have a business coach? And I said, yes, I do. And it's so important that if I'm willing to be in this industry, do I believe in the industry? And how this whole industry got started is real simple, is you look at every professional football player, baseball player, basketball player, when they start from the very peewee league all the way to Hall of Fame, they've always had coaches. And one of the things I hear quite often is, you know, when I become successful, when I make it, I'll get a coach. Well, that's like Tom Brady saying, when I win the Super Bowl, that's when I'll get a coach. That coach is somebody that stands beside them, stands in front of them, stands with them, and sees things that they don't see. And several years ago, when this industry began, professional businessmen and women were saying, if they have a coach, why can't I? And that's really what we are. And one of the biggest miscommunications is what is a coach? And if you get online, there's so many people out there that talk about they're a coach, but so many people don't really understand what that means. And a coach is not somebody that sits there and tells somebody what to do or really mentors. A coach is somebody that understands how to ask the right questions and how to get the information and the answers out of them. And a lot of times people ask me, well, what do I get from coaching? And I say, really, there's five things. And there's five things that I really offer. And number one is understanding. Nobody will understand you like I do. I'm here to understand who you are, where you're at, where do you want to be. Number two, we talk about hope. When you don't believe that you can go any further, there's somebody that does, and there's somebody that believes in you. They see the light at the end of the tunnel when you don't. We talk about passion, and I tell every one of my clients that nobody in this world will have more passion about you than I will. And I always say is if there's one person in this world that needs to have more passion about you, that's you. And until that, if that changes, we can't work together. We talk about accountability. One of the things about what people need is, are you accountable not only to yourself and other people, but are you accountable to your dreams, your goals? But most of all, is that trusted advisor. You have somebody that lives and breathes to take care of you. And you know, there's things that you don't see, that you don't understand. And it's not my job to tell you where to go, but I will ask you the right questions. I will ask you the right things that will help you make the right decision. And it's not whether I agree with it necessarily or not. It's, are you going in a direction that is best for you? And we will help you get there. And it's like I said at the very beginning, it's knowing where you're at, knowing where you want to be, and how to close that gap. And yes, there's teaching and mentoring involved, but it's how to get that person to where they really want to be.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a marvelous book that was written a number of years ago. It's in the third, fourth something edition called Change Your Questions, right. Change Your Life. Right. Very impactful book told in the form of a parable. Mm-hmm. But the core premise of the book is that the quality of the questions you ask yourself, mm-hmm. and others,
right.
determines the quality of your experience of yourself, mm-hmm. and others. And that changing your questions, which are oftentimes the real premise of the book is that there are questions we're asking ourselves without realizing that we're asking these questions, and our behaviors are the answers, mm-hmm. to those questions. So, you know, we might be asking ourselves, like, what kind of a day do I have today? Like, who am I going to meet? Where am I going to go? What's the weather going to be like? And the answer to those questions determines the clothes we take out of the closet or off of the floor or wherever we're dressing ourselves. What we don't realize is some of those questions include, how will I impress people today? How will I show up and get my unmet emotional needs, in these interactions? And we dress ourselves to answer those questions. Right. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. It really gets beyond just the superficial surface of things. You have logged over 12,500 hours of coaching and training.
Right.
This means you've been in a lot of conversations and asked a lot of questions. What are some of the common themes that you see out there in the world that your clients are dealing with, that your questions have opened their eyes to things they weren't aware of? What are some of the, again, we were asking Thomas about big buckets for insurance solutions. What are the big buckets for small business owner challenges that your questions have helped them tackle?
I can talk for hours on this. I love that question. Thank you so much for asking. You know, a lot of it is sometimes what business are you in? And it's so exciting because a lot of times people believe that they're in the business that they're in. And here's a great example is I was working with an orthodontist and I asked him, what business are you in? And he goes, of course, orthodontics. Well, if I spent $500,000 in education, why wouldn't I be? And when I asked him the question and challenged that, he didn't really know where to go. And when we went through a process that we go through is what business are you really in? How is business? To kind of make a long story short, we determined that he was in the business, or actually he determined that he was in the business of helping young men and women in their teenage years not be embarrassed about their smile. And it's amazing how that alone helped their confidence. So we went from putting braces on somebody to helping them with their smile. And once he changed the way he thought, his business just exploded because he was really in a different business than what he thought. And we go back to the 60s where a lot of the trains, a lot of locomotives, they thought they were the train business. They weren't. They were in the transportation business. And it's amazing how when you have companies that understand that, they're able to do so much for so many people. And a lot of times, that's what these questions do. It helps them change the way they think. And if you look at my website and you look and hear my teachings, you'll hear me say things like, our thinking will always determine what we believe. And a lot of times, your questions that you ask yourself is based on what you're thinking. And when you think and understand that that determines what you believe, your beliefs is transitioned into your actions, and your actions will always have a successful outcome regardless of the circumstances. And it's exciting when you really zero into that it's about what they think. So we can start changing their thinking through questions and how to ask the right questions at the right time. They think in a whole different way, and their business transforms in ways they've never dreamed.
You know, one of the things I love, Bob, about what you just said is as I look at myself and my own life, and I've benefited from coaching. I've delivered certain forms of coaching. I don't hang my shingle as a coach, but I've certainly worked for a large organization, leading group workshops and transformational programs. Not something that I publicly talk about very much, but it very much got me into that world. This sequence you mentioned from thoughts to beliefs to actions fascinates me because those are linked so powerfully that actually moving one end of the spectrum can move the other one. And what I love about this is you can go to work on those thoughts. And if you have a skilled coach who you're willing, you're coachable, right?
Right.
You can participate in these inquiries that can help you change the way you think, which change will change what you believe, and that will change your actions. You can also do it the other way. And this is where a coach can be really helpful. Don't worry about it. Just do this. And I know you're not in the advice business. That's something that the International Coach Federation and others have made very clear in their code of ethics. But it is interesting how people are more willing to take action in a coaching relationship, whether on the athletic field or in business, that they wouldn't have otherwise taken. Enough of those actions start to produce results that change your belief about what's possible, working backwards, right? Once you have a different belief about what's possible, you start thinking differently and seeing new opportunities. So that just the linkages between thoughts, beliefs, and actions going either direction seems so important. Mindset is something that is often addressed in this regard. And there's a lot of somewhat trite ways to talk about this over the years, developed by many of the leaders in the industry, but you're stinking thinking and mm-hmm. things of that right. nature, right? But truly, the one place we spend the most time is in our own thoughts right. and in our own experience. That's not always a very pretty place to be. We say the most unkind things mm-hmm. to ourselves about ourselves. And so dealing with mindset is not something for the faint of heart, right? How do you approach mindset work? If an owner hires you to work with her or her team, where do you begin that engagement?
It's beginning with systems and processes. And one of the things that you'll see on my tagline on many of my social media, it says, we facilitate thought transformation through innovative systems and processes resulting in a 2020 conscious direction. And I know it's a mindful of thought there, and it's really about understanding your wheelhouse. And this is where I really focus on, is changing mindset. And for those of us who've been on stage, you've been on stage and speaking and coaching, we and sales, we buy based on emotion. You know, Brian Tracy says that selling is 100% emotion. And a lot of the speakers that you see today, a lot of the bigger names, what you find is it's all emotion. And how often have us in the room or the people out listening today has gone through one of those big seminars and they came out just excited and pumped up and they say their life has changed for 2 weeks. And they're right back where they were. One of the things that we focus—
You're very generous, by the way. I've seen it 2 hours.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And when we focus on mindset, it's really about that paradigm change. And we have, at Bobber's Business Coaching, we've developed a three-part process of changing paradigm, because once your paradigm changes, it doesn't change back. Whereas we do focus on emotion, but we really want to focus on that paradigm. So to answer your question, we have a lot of systems and processes, and one of them is we use a lot of DISC assessments, which not only teaches people how to think, but we focus on behavior and motivator. And I love it because it's like a mirror for your mind. So it tells you how you're thinking, and it also helps you understand how other people think. So it takes the focus off of you and also puts it on other people. We focus on systems that allow you to not focus on what you want, but help focus on what other people are looking for. Zig Ziglar says, when you take care of other people, you get taken care of. And it's amazing how when we focus on the other people's needs and taking care of other people, it's amazing how things change. I talk a lot about success. Success is making sure that you're taken care of. Significance is helping other people take care of themselves. When you're successful, you may not be significant, but when you're significant, you're successful. And it's a powerful thought process. So when we start changing the way you think, going back to self-talk, we talk to ourselves more than anybody else. And I always tell my clients, there's one thing that you're not allowed to do anymore. And they laugh at me when I say this. I say, you're not allowed to beat yourself up anymore. That's my job. If anybody's going to beat you up, it's going to be me, and I won't do it. So I take that away from them because I want them to think and have those thoughts that transform into their beliefs, but I don't want them to beat themselves up anymore, because why should they, when they can think, how are they going to help someone else? And the more confident they become, it really changes their lives in amazing ways.
You know, I just, as you were speaking, and I love the passion and the energy that comes through, and I really get that commitment that you have. I thought, you know, so many people think that a coach is off of the field of play, and in many cases, that's true. But in the business realm, you're often alongside in the operating environment. Right. You're available. You're, whether it's on the bat phone or on a weekly call or something, you're right in there with them. And the image I had just popped up. There was a movie from, I don't know, early 90s or something. It was a football movie. It was called Necessary Roughness, yes. I think, with Scott Bakula. Uh-huh. And there's a moment, he's an aging quarterback right. in the film. He's getting towards the end, and his body is beginning to break down and things. And there's the kind of peak of the thing, if I'm remembering correctly, I mean, this has been a long time since I saw this movie. He has to run the ball
right.
down the field. And he's got a teammate, a huge South Pacific Islander guy, who just looks at him and says, no one will touch you.
Great scene.
And to me, that's the coach you are. You're right there with him saying, listen, I got you. You just got to run the ball. I got you.
Thank you so much for saying that. And yes, I'm picturing that scene. It's a powerful scene, and I can picture it. Nobody's going to get you, and nobody did. And I always tell my clients, this is what I'm here for. I live and breathe to take care of you. And sometimes I am behind them where I tell them that, you know, sometimes I'm going to take you by the mask and pull you down and say, we need to focus back in. Sometimes I can see the dangers around them when they can't see, but oftentimes I'm standing right beside them. And I always tell them, I will not pick you up when you fall down. what I will do is when you fall down, I'm going to kneel next to you and we'll get up together. And that's such a powerful, powerful concept because it's about them doing it, but they always know that they have somebody in their corner and somebody that truly believes in them. That's why I tell all my clients is, when we're going to sit down and ask, I'm going to ask you a few questions, which lets me know, but more importantly, you know, does it make sense to work together? Because for them to work with me, they have to be passionate about working with me, but I got to be just as passionate about working with them.
Yeah, I could tell, and it shows. Let's step out of our individual expertise for a minute and just talk about the general environment. The world of the solopreneur, the small business owner, the small to mid-sized business, maybe it's a family business, maybe it's something that's grown over the years, it's now in the 1 to 5 million range. There's a whole spectrum in this world. From your unique vantage points, Thomas dealing with the insurance specialty, Bob dealing with a lot of things having to do with operations and mindset and things of that nature, you see a lot of the challenges that people are facing in the trenches every day. What's the state of small business from your point of view? What's going on out there? What's working? What's not working? What are you seeing through your unique lens, Thomas?
Oh, that's a
it's a broad
big question.
Yeah, I'm curious to know kind of how it shows up for you.
Well, from my perspective, I don't know, it's just kind of off the cuff. I mean, we see so many businesses that are, you know, just struggling with compliance and just the costs associated with doing business that isn't directly related to the business, right? To the delivery of the product or service.
Right. You're not talking about COGS costs, cost of goods sold and things. It's all of the ancillary expenses and costs.
It's the regulatory compliance. It's the HR and the insurance. I mean, there's so much going on. There's so much noise in the system, and it makes it very, very difficult to focus on what you went into business to do. And unless you outsource to trusted, you know, professionals, you're gonna have a really hard time navigating those waters on your own. And coming out, you know, of the fog anytime soon,
yeah. Right?
And that's what I love about, you know, what Bob's talking about too, is that if you would have the foresight to invest in Bob and in outsourcing, you're going to save a whole lot of money in the long run, and you're going to get to your goal. You're going to get out of the fog quicker, and you're going to get to your whatever your goal might be, whether it's a 3-year goal, 5-year goal, whatever that is, you're going to get there quicker. I mean, I don't know what Bob charges, but that bit about helping people to understand what they deliver, like the orthodontist, right? He doesn't just give you healthy teeth or solve your dental problems. He transforms people's lives by improving their self-esteem.
Right. He's not delivering braces. He's delivering confidence. Yeah.
And you can go your whole career thinking that's what your job is to fix teeth, bad teeth. And if you just made that one simple shift, it's a game changer.
Yeah.
Tom, I love what you said there. And I agree with everything there. I just want to kind of add to that is what you just said there is when you change one simple thing, it's a game changer. And that's exactly what it is. And a lot of times people kind of look at each other as, okay, what do we do similar and how can we compete with each other? And it's not about competing. And Tom and I had a great conversation before we went on the air about what he does and what I do. And the key is complementing your differences, you know, where you have a certain set of skills and I do as well, and Adrian, you do as well. And when we all come together, we can really help people in ways they never expected. The one thing that I want to add to what you just said, Tom, is one of the things that people are looking for, and people ask me all the time, who is your target client? Who's your target prospect? And people laugh at me because they think I'm kidding when I say this. I say it's a person with two eyes, one nose, one mouth, and two ears. And I say, but that's not everybody. And most of the time when we focus on who we're looking for, we focus on industry, we focus on how much money they make or how big the company is. But really, it's about people. That solo entrepreneur who's 18 years old, who has no idea what he or she is getting into, to the billion-dollar CEO. What is the one thing both of them are looking for? Is that somebody is there that's going to take care and care about them. And when they have that one person that they know that's in their corner, they can accomplish anything. So it's not as much as what they do, but focusing on who they are, because we all want somebody to take care of us. And when you have somebody there that you know that's there, it's priceless.
I love it. The one mouth and two ears, and that's not everybody, is very good. I like that a lot. It seems to me, Thomas, you said a minute ago about how having a trusted advisor is so essential. And I couldn't agree more. And at some level, we all know that. And there's a problem, which is how is trust developed in a digital age? There's a lot of real life, old school stuff that still happens. People still get together in person, still go to networking meetings, still have coffee, still golf together to, go for a walk at the Japanese Friendship Garden, all the things that we've always done to build meaningful connections with people. And yet so much of the way we connect with business owners and the community at large is now mediated by the technology that we all rely on for communication. Mm-hmm. The fundamentals of communication haven't changed. Some of the plumbing is a little different now. How do you, Thomas, build trust and establish yourself as that advisor people can rely on so that you can even get to the point of having a conversation with them about their options? How are you doing it? How are you operating that side of your own business development?
Yeah, great question. It's through education and, constant communication and through, having a clear, concise message. Like you were saying, the ways that you build a relationship aren't really any different. It's just the medium through which you're building the relationship has changed. And so it is different. And you have to, you've got to adapt, but it's communication. You've got to communicate and you've got to educate and you've got to help the individual that you're speaking to, like Bob said, not a group or a, income level or an industry, and a person, help that person understand that what you have is valuable and that you're interested in their well-being, and it's not about, you.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Bob, I know you've been very active on LinkedIn. You've done a lot of, you lead workshops on it. I'm curious to know, how do you in your own business approach building trust and creating relationships that can lead to conversations where you might end up doing business with somebody?
Simply put, asking questions. This originally came through, I believe, Zig Ziglar many years ago, and many people have developed it. But when I talk about sales and talk about, closing the deal and getting to that point, I always talk about there's a checklist. First of all, is trust there? Do they see the need? I always say, if a client doesn't say the need, they don't see it. Are you the solution? What about urgency? Do they need to make the decision now, or even money, or when we get to the health or the insurance side, what about health? And we have to check all those boxes off. And I always talk about when there's an objection or somebody says no, it's because one of those boxes are not checked off. And how do you get those boxes checked off? It's nothing more than asking more questions. And one of the principles that I teach, when I teach, especially in the sales end, is when you ask somebody their pain points or what's wrong or their problems, they will always shut down on you. When you ask people what they're good at or what they're great at, they will tell you their problems. And it's amazing how a lot of times that alone will really pull out trust, is asking them the questions, letting them know that you care and not trying to sell them something, but you're looking to take away their need. And when you're really building trust and establishing need, becoming the solution, creating urgency, and really, is this really affordable? Not as much as do they have the money or not, but is this something they want to invest in? That's what really brings out trust and really establish you as that trusted advisor.
You said something that I want to circle back to, which is urgency. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of times in sales organizations, the view is that urgency has to get manufactured somehow in the conversation. In other words, urgency is going to get created over there by the effective salesperson. And I'm not so sure about that, mm-hmm. to be quite frank. I think that can happen, but it usually happens through a form of manipulation or something. A few years ago, I heard Angelique Ruers, who advises a lot of coaches and consultants who want to work with corporations, she said something so mind-bogglingly brilliant that I mention it as often as I can, which is not only do you have to have the right solution, and not only do you have to have the right social proof and all the kinds of things, not only do they have to know you exist, you have to solve a problem that mm-hmm. is painful, et cetera, et cetera, all those things that we know, you have to nail the when,
right.
the timing, the mm-hmm. temporality of it, which means you need to be communicating to people about those moments mm-hmm. when your service is going to help them solve their problem. The core premise of this is that everybody will nod their heads and agree
right.
that those solutions are a good idea mm-hmm. and it's not the right time mm-hmm.
right.
for them. At any given moment, she said, you know, anywhere from 1% to 5% of your ideal prospects are actually looking to buy a solution. Mm-hmm. So the challenge is recognizing that, not to try to twist the arm of the other 95% right. to get them to mm-hmm. buy now, but to educate, get out in front of it, and to speak to those specific situations when you can do your best work right. so that when that happens or when they hear mm-hmm. about it from somebody else, they can say, oh, you know what? You need to call Bob. You need to call Thomas. So let me ask you, Thomas, we'll start with you. What are some of those moments in time when getting a solution into health insurance is urgent? Like, what's going on in their world that makes this not just a nice idea, but something they need to solve right now? What are some of the, how would that show up in reality?
Well, that's the thing about insurance is, you know, you realize you need it when you need it
and then it's
not
too late.
Whole lot thought goes into it beforehand, right? I mean, health insurance obviously is something that people have come to expect from their employer. So for an employer, it's constantly on their mind. If not constantly, then at least for 3 months out of the year, you know, leading up to the renewal. And then probably every month as they're looking at the P&L going, you know, what am I getting for what I'm paying? Can I continue to afford this? But I think health insurance is one of those things where it's pretty much on people's minds every month, in one way or another. Either you're, you know, seeking treatment and you're coming to realize, like you were saying earlier at the beginning, you know, you go to use the policy and that's when you really learn what it's all about and what it covers and what it doesn't. And so there's when you have to use it, there's every check that you see with the deduction for the premium. So I think in this case, it's regular. It's, you know, at least once a month, if not more often. And, you know, this can be transforming to pretty much anybody's budget when you're talking about the kinds of savings that you're able to realize by making the switch, you know, from insurance to medical cost sharing. So that's one of the things I like about this is that it's, and there's no, you know, open enrollment period. It's the, you know, it's not like we're in now, you know, with the ACA, it's not like you have to wait until November 1st to start, you know, to get in, right? You can get in at any time.
But I like what you said, because there was at least one, maybe there was more than one, but I heard the one very concrete practical moment, which is when you're sitting down looking at the P&L and wondering, what am I getting for this fairly large item,
line item
on the expense yeah. side of the form? That's when something like this is relevant. That's when having a conversation with you would be a really good idea. An actual situation, a moment in time where someone's probably more likely to listen and be educated about their options. Bob, what are some of those concrete moments in the world of the business owner when seeking out a coach is probably a really good idea. What are they dealing with?
Well, there's two things. One of it goes right back to trust, and going back to your question on LinkedIn is I don't use LinkedIn to sell, and nor did I teach it that way. I believe LinkedIn, and for that matter, from my perspective, social media is for reputation. So when they are looking at you and they're watching you, this is what they're putting out there. So that alone starts to build that trust. But the second one really goes back into risk. And we've talked about insurance is reducing the risk. And you know, about why do you buy insurance is to reduce the risk. Do you want to take the risk or push it away to somebody else? And really, that's kind of even what coaching is you want to reduce that risk. And many times that is by trust. But it's also about that urgency. I love how you said it shouldn't be manipulated. But when they see that they need to act now, and when we put that urgency there of, if you don't do this now, what is tomorrow going to look like? What is the next day going to look like? And really what builds that urgency is when they see that they want to reduce the risk. And once they see the risk, sometimes they can afford the risk and accept it. Sometimes they can't. And when you ask those questions and they start seeing that, what we do is reduce that risk. And many times that creates that urgency in a way of bringing a peace of mind, not bringing a scare tactic. And I think that's the difference between bringing peace of mind and scare tactic is your genuine what are you there for? Are you there to take care of their needs, or are you there to take care of yourself? If you're there to take care of their needs, it's really about taking care of them, and that's what people are looking for.
You like sell success insurance.
There you go.
Sell like
I like that.
Failure insurance.
Failure insurance. Right, because you're guaranteed to fail at some point, but how to mitigate the downside risk of that, how to limit your exposure.
Hire Bob.
Hire Bob. And I can think of a lot of other examples too, where, for example, you know, when sales are down and repeat customers seem to not be coming back and you're not sure why, maybe you don't have a marketing problem. Maybe you don't have a pricing problem. The knee-jerk reaction would be, well, let's run a promotion. Let's slash prices, fire sales, right. Something. Let's get the money back. Maybe you have a mindset problem. It's not the first place people would look, but it's often one that can yield the longest term return on their investment. I'm curious, there's a few elephants in the room, Thomas, when it comes to insurance that I'd just like to address. We hear a lot of conversations about single payer options as being a progressive solution that maybe would help mitigate some of this. What's your point of view on single payer? Is that a good idea? Has it got some problems? What do we need to know about that? Other than it's probably not happening tomorrow.
I'm a huge fan of limited government. I don't want them involved in my life. I don't want them involved in my life hardly at all. There isn't anything that they do that that the private market, in my opinion, can do better. And we don't have a private market in health insurance. I think that's important to say. You know, because people think, oh, this is capitalism, right? No, this is crony capitalism that we have in the health insurance. It's highly regulated, and it isn't a free market.
It's private, but it's not a market in the sense of being exposed to market dynamics in the normal way.
Correct. It is a hybrid of sorts. But the last thing I want to do is to turn over my health and well-being, the healthcare to the government. That's a bad idea for a lot of reasons.
One of the other big topics is innovation in med tech and other things. There's a lot of, in financial services, there's a lot of apps that have been developed for self-managed investments and other things, really trying to democratize access, taking those middle people out of the equation, whether it's a broker of your mutual funds or whatever, or somebody selling health insurance. Do you see technology playing an important role in kind of leveling this playing field, or does it also have some pitfalls? What's your point of view?
No, I absolutely agree that we are on the verge of transforming healthcare already. It's happening. Those wheels are in motion. When you have Amazon, Berkshire, and JP getting together and doing what they're doing with the technology that they have and the minds that they have, they're doing some great things. I think we're going to be very happily surprised by how they're able to reduce costs with what they're working on. I think they call it what is it?
I don't remember, but
it's like an oasis.
I know
it's not an oasis, yeah. But anyway, there's so much going on and so much money going into health tech. Some very exciting things that are coming out. CB Insights, I don't know if you've ever heard of that, the research group. They have a tremendous amount of information available that explaining all of the things that are going on in healthcare tech. And it's just, it's overwhelming. It's a lot. And it's very exciting. So I'm a big believer in the fact that those solutions are going to come to the market sooner rather than later, and to help really transform the healthcare delivery system and the way we pay for it.
The way we shop and buy.
Yeah. There's direct, there is a company I was just reading about yesterday called MD something. I'm sorry, I can't remember MD something, but basically it's a marketplace for you to buy procedures, healthcare procedures, through a competitive platform, right? Where you can go and providers will compete for your business. So this whole thing about price transparency and all of the, you know, there are a lot of companies coming out with tools to help you understand the actual costs of care. Of course, we have the new rule from Health and Human Services for 2023, I think it is, where all hospitals are going to be required to provide transparent pricing on all their services, which just on the, actually today, a hospital group is suing HHS to avoid having to do that. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, whenever anyone's spending a lot of money to try to prevent transparency, you know there's something there. I would love to have an augmented reality type app on my phone, that, you know, the kind where you just hold it up with the camera on and it has an overlay that should kind of like a heads-up display, so that if you were in the emergency room, for example, and you, or the waiting room, and you just held this thing up and looked around, and it would show you the price of things, would just appear right on the screen. There'd be a little window next to, you know, a provider to giving you their education, and also, oh, out of network. Because one of the things you don't know is you can go to an in-network hospital, and while you're in the room, various specialists can wander in and out of the room. You don't know who they are. You didn't invite them in. Oh, and by the way, some of them are out of network for your plan. Even though you're at an in-network hospital, you're going to get a bill from 15 of those separately, including people you have no idea who they are. I don't know this person. I don't know why my Band-Aid cost $20. Anyway, I digress.
This happens all the time.
Happens all the time. Bob, you're using technology yourself in innovating some of the ways you package and deliver your services. Why don't you talk a little bit about that as we begin to wrap up this conversation?
You know, as far as technology, using LinkedIn and using a lot of apps and this type of thing, it's amazing how you never know where your people are going to be listening at. So I use podcasts quite often. I have my podcast, it's Intentional Leadership, that I talk about just different things in leadership that it's when I look at my statistics, I'm listened to by 24 countries and over half the states. And you look at where people are listening from, it's pretty powerful. Just the Zoom and the way we can communicate with people around the world, WhatsApp. So many international clients will be using WhatsApp because it's a free service, but yet it's very stable. So there's so many great things out there, but it really comes down to building relationships. And people ask me, what do I do when it comes to marketing and different things like that? And what I tell people is I have cups of coffee with people. And most of the time I'm sitting down, having a cup of coffee with people and getting to know them. And I would say, even though all the technology is great and it works, it's about that one-on-one relationship.
Absolutely. Well, I'm excited for the work you're doing. I think it's vitally important. And whether people realize they need both of you or not, they absolutely do. They should look further into your world, find out more about what you provide. I know you both provide a lot of educational materials, things to build awareness. Bob, where do people learn more about you and connect with you online?
Get on LinkedIn.com, Robert Risch. My website is Bob Risch, B-O-B-R-E-I-S-H. You can get on either one of those two and find out everything about me. You can get on my podcast, anchor.fm/ intentional leadership. BobRisch.com. You can find all my contact information.
Marvelous. Thomas Lindsay, where do people connect with you and learn more and get educated about these topics you're so passionate about?
You can connect with me on LinkedIn. That's Thomas Rock Lindsay. And you can also go to our website, which is gotpurehealth.com, G-O-T, purehealth.com.
Marvelous. There's a whole world of information and options available there in both of your realms. And you're serving such an important part of our economic engine, which is the small business owners, the people really close to the communities that they serve who really need help and need somebody in their corner. Bob Risch, Thomas Lindsay, I want to thank you both for joining me in the studio today.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre. We'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.